friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Hey, I have an abbess in studio. Monasteries, sometimes we're of the opinion that monasteries was an Irish invention, but even before St. Patrick hit Ireland, there were monasteries, particularly in Europe. Maybe you fill us in a little bit on that, Sister Maura.
Well, the movement started actually in the Egyptian desert, 3rd, 4th century, and Palestine, moved over to Europe about the shortly before the time of St. Patrick, the south of France. And there are theories that St. Patrick visited some of those places in the south of France and brought some of it back here. But then the movement got very strong in Europe from then on, and in Italy, and about Rome, and the whole area outside Rome, Subiaco and Monte Cassino in the south to Naples. And that's in the 5th and 6th century, St. Benedict lived and founded his monasteries, and the huge movement just went out from that. There were monasteries, the movement came to Ireland very early. I think around about the time of St. Benedict.
Yeah.
Very soon afterwards.
He was in the, 15... was he 6th century?
6th century, yes. Yeah. Around about the turn of the 6th century is the date we give to his rule.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think most of us would have known even before our most recent Pope choose the name Benedict. We knew, particularly if we had any Irish background at all, for that matter, we call it even European background, the Benedictine nuns, Benedictine sisters, we associate with primarily as teaching and indeed culture and Catholicism big time.
Right.
How many, or when did the Benedictines actually set up in Ireland?
Well, they, I can't tell you much about the very early ones.
Yeah.
When the rule of St. Benedict came. See, there was a thriving monastic community, Clonmacnoise and Arran, St. Enda, Bangor, soon after St. Patrick, in the early days of the Irish Church. And they got their own rule together, monastic rule, St. Columba and Columbanus, and they didn't really need the rule of St. Benedict. So the Benedictines really only came a big way to Ireland after the Celtic Benedictine, the first Celtic monastery had got into a time of bit of decay or stagnation, 11th or 12th century, and it was the rule of St. Benedict brought by the Cistercians at that time, and it was widespread in Ireland from then on. Cistercians live according to the rule of St. Benedict, but they are a slightly different branch of the family. All that time, there were more Cistercians than Benedictines in Ireland.
The Cistercians, was that peculiar to Ireland? Was it, or were they throughout Europe as
well? They were throughout Europe, founded by St. Bernard in France, 12th century. In the after the Reformation and the Henry VIII and Queen Elizabeth, there were very restrictive laws against Catholics in Ireland, as we know, and all of these monasteries were destroyed or abandoned, almost all of them, and there were no Benedictines in Ireland for several centuries. And it was only after Catholic Emancipation, 1829, when religious orders started coming back to Ireland. But even then, it was quite a while before the Benedictines came. The first ones came round about 1920, after the First World War, and it was a group from Belgium, monks from Maritsu. The abbot of Maritsu at the time was a big Irishman, Columba Marmion, an Irishman who had entered that Belgian monastery, and was very keen to have a foundation in Ireland. Now, at the same time, this is a different strand of the story. There were nuns, Irish women had gone out, beginning of the penal times, 1690, after the Battle of the Boyne, finally, where they saw they weren't going to be able to make a foundation in Ireland, and they set up in Belgium, in the town of Ypres.
Mm-hmm.
And this Irish community, they were known as the Irish Dames of Ypres.
Mm-hmm.
From 1690 on, they ran a little school in that town. For, to begin with, it was the daughters of Irish emigres who were living out there, soldiers fighting for France and other groups. Later, it was a kind of ordinary school for the town of Ypres. And they were continuing there, but girls joined the community who had Irish connections, some from Ireland, but also some English, French, German, Belgian. It was a mixed international community. And in 1914, the monastery was bombed, destroyed at the beginning of the First World War, and the community had to leave the town and finally landed in Ireland. So it was around about the same time that a group of men from Maritsu, the group of women from Ypres, came to Ireland, and that's the beginning of modern time of Benedictine life in Ireland. And the monks from Maritsu are now at Glenstall.
Mm-hmm.
And the women from Ypres are at Kylemore Abbey.
And
since then, there's been a couple more, but that was the beginning
right,
of it.
Right, okay, well, I think the Glenstall Abbey, has indeed gets a fair amount of visitors, and indeed, I think the monks at Glenstall Abbey, we know them through music and through song and through modern technology. I don't know how many listeners would be aware that Kylemore Abbey set in probably, and as a mailman, this is difficult for me to say or to refer to, but it has to be the gem of the west of Ireland, and indeed it is a huge attraction, visitor attraction. A quarter of a million
mm-hmm.
visitors every year visit Kylemore Abbey in Connemara. A magnificent setting.
Yes.
Magnificent place, and maybe you describe Kylemore Abbey for us.
Well, as you say, it is a magnificent place, and as you say, for a Mayo man to say that, the jewel of Connemara, I appreciate that. Well, the first impression that many people get of the Abbey is when they're driving in from Galway or from Mayo, from Meenan,
mm-hmm.
And you've been driving through the wildest of Connemara country, mountains, both sides of the road are gaunt, and few houses, sheep, and
not a sheep.
Right. Then you suddenly the vegetation starts getting a little bit more lush, more green, and grass, and slightly bigger houses, and you come to a bridge, and mostly during the summer there are cars stopped on that bridge, and you're at the side of this beautiful lake, perfectly tranquil and calm, and over the other side of the lake, at the foot of a dark mountain, this exotic building, neo-Gothic, has a sort of nestling there. And you just stop and think, my goodness, what's that doing here? Where am I? It's a complete contrast to what you've just been driving through. But the more you look at it, the more you see it is, as you say, a jewel in there. It's not a contrast that disturbs it.
I can't count the number of times that I have visited Carnmore Abbey, and indeed twice as many times when I have diverted just to get a look across the lake at, at this, what appears to be a mirage when you're when you're there.
Yes, that's right.
And it is stunning. It is also it is so steeped in history that one would find it maybe difficult to understand that actually this is less than 100 years old, but it has and continues to be just magnificent, and it is almost eerie in the sense that the history hits you, the seat of learning, of education, of culture. Is so evident, and it is like a magnet, really.
Yes,
is.
Yes, yes.
Great number of tours, including CIE tours and so many others. It's a compulsory stop.
That's right.
It really is. And I'd say that there are a great number of people who probably get to Connemara, and somehow they go to Connemara because it is everything you describe. Mm-hmm. Connemara has got to be, it's a tremendous beauty spot. It's if you want to get away from it all, get into Connemara. And perhaps there are many people who maybe only stumble across.
Mm-hmm.
Carnmore Abbey.
Yes, yeah.
But it's well worth, it is definitely well worth the trip. I want to go back, though, to the history, because many would know, of course, that seat of education, a boarding school, a high school, which unfortunately had closed in 2010.
Right.
The school, the boarding school, it was considered to be rather elite boarding school. I see you cringing at that one. I take that back, Abbas.
Right. Could I say something about that?
Yeah.
Well, when the nuns started teaching there in 1920, they had to make a living out there in that place, and they took in boarders, started with very small paying students.
Yeah.
They had to make their living, pay their way out there and keep the, maintain the place. But very soon, I think it was 1923 or 24, they opened the school for local girls.
Mm-hmm.
And that never stopped. There was constantly a population of local girls, non-fee-paying.
Yes.
Ordinary Connemara girls who got their education
right
there.
Was there a sense, Sister Maura Hickey, that there was a non-spoken sense of recruitment there for girls in particular, that many of them, as we know, did actually join the Benedictines. Was that...
That's not true. There were only very few of them who joined the community. There were local girls at the very beginning, and maybe not quite local, from round about County Mayo, South Galway, who did join the community. And were...
But that was villains. That was not the principal goal.
Not through the school, no.
Yeah.
Through the school, we've won great many supporters, people who love the place, became very good friends, but there's only one member of the community now who was a student there a long time ago. That wasn't the main motive.
Yeah.
No.
I kind of knew that, but I wanted to draw you out on that. Mitchell Henry, somebody who I noticed because you have a foundation now as you go forward, which is very progressive, and a lot of Americans, I'm sure many, on this side of the Atlantic. You won't hear it here, but there is a goal for Americans here at different sponsorship levels to go forward. I'll give you the website for that later on. But the tuition and the tuition level throughout the decades would in itself not have gone a tenth of the way in terms of preserving.
No way, not at all.
So you became farmers. You became, learned of the value of making do and, indeed, supporting yourselves the hard way.
That's right, yes. But we also became, if I may say it, businesswomen, in a good sense. St. Benedict urges people to earn their living whatever way they can, and whatever they do, do it well and honestly and justly. So you find Benedictine sites, well-run businesses in many ways, and
right.
Benedictine schools are a well-run business. But Canmore had always been a very favourite place for visitors who came for fishing holidays, even before the time of Mitchell Henry. That was when he started. But in the 50s, 60s, 70s, as Ireland was building itself up after independence, you know, developing a tourist industry, people were discovering Canmore. And when groups started flying into Shannon Airport wanting to do a tour of Ireland, Canmore was practically on the route, and they just started coming in. And the nuns thought, well, we've got to exercise Benedictine hospitality, give them something to eat and drink, and make them feel a bit welcome. And that grew, and then people wanted to buy some things to take home, so we opened a shop. And that all was very well done and developed.
Extremely well done, yeah.
And the
gardens.
At that time when the nuns came, these magnificent Victorian walled gardens were almost a ruin. You could see broken foundations, bits of glass houses, and no or hardly any garden beds or anything. And because the tourists, one was becoming much more aware of what could be done, what treasures we had in Ireland, and let's rescue them and be proud of them, show them. And the nuns decided to restore the walled gardens. Sister Magdalena was the motor behind all of that.
Sister Magdalena is here too. I just want to say welcome to you, sister. And we'll come back to you in a minute. But Sister Maura Hickey is the abbess of Canmore Abbey and our guest in studio. I just wanted to talk a little about Mitchell Henry and what brought him to Connemara in the first place, when actually Castle Watton there, or was there Sorth Castle there?
There was a little fishing lodge on the lake shore, where the castle now is. Owned by an English family who had settled around there. And Mitchell Henry, before he inherited the wealth that made him able to build Calmore, he used to come there on fishing holidays and stay in that lodge on the lake shore. So he knew the place, loved it already. And he got married and had a family. I was living in London and Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
And when he inherited this great wealth from his family, the legend has it that it was his wife who said to him, the legend says it was on their honeymoon journey, but I don't think it was. Or if she did, he wasn't in a position to do it at that time. That on their honeymoon, she saw that view over the lake from the bridge and said, Mitchell, this is where I would like to live. And he said, Margaret, I'll build you a castle there. So that's one of the motives why he built it. And it's surely true. He was doing something wonderful for his beautiful wife. But it wasn't only that. He was a Unitarian, a Christian with strong commitments for social justice and improvement. And he wanted to do something big with his wealth to improve the lot of the people of Connemara, improve agriculture there, encourage people to learn how to take care of the land and to ply different trades. And the building of the castle was a whole project in that, what we would have been doing in developing countries in recent years, from United States or Europe, giving employment to a big team of workers and training them well, training them in agriculture, the gardens and building, carpentry, and then the house had a whole army of domestic servants, women and men, young girls.
Very welcome when you think of that area, which a short period before that was one of the areas ravaged by the Irish famine.
Yes.
So to it was ambitious, but it was also very welcome.
Very welcome, very welcome.
And so I'm sure that he was quite happy to see the a community of sisters with the business acumen and ethos coming in to actually take it over. Although it wasn't born out of pure generosity, because he was basically in financial straits. He was all but he wasn't able to continue.
Later. At the beginning, he was a very wealthy person and could afford to be generous.
He also had tragedy, didn't his wife?
His wife
died only a few years after she, after they moved there.
After they moved to Connemara.
Another tragedy is daughter.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, was killed in an accident with a horse and carriage down the road, and a child. I think both were killed, the daughter and child. And he was heartbroken, and his heart was no longer in the place. And he seems to have lost his money from then on. Some people say he was involved in politics, land reform and home rule.
Very big on home rule.
He was, yes. And he was, he had invested a lot of his wealth in draining his own land, the estate of Calmore. And you can see quite a lot of fields around, right down to the sea, that are far improved beyond the usual bogs and rushes around about. And that was the work he was doing. And he wanted, when he went into politics, he wanted to drain the whole of Connemara, that is told of him. and he wanted to invest some of his own money, but get government money and other people as well.
Yeah. And that would have been a long shot at best.
It was a very long shot, and it didn't come off. And some people say he lost his money in that. We don't really know what happened to him.
Right.
He ended up with very little.
Now,
I think, as you say, he would have been glad to see a community coming in. And we're not mainly business people. We're nuns who preserve and love that place, can serve us as he did. And business people, because the place has to be run well in order to survive. And we were educationalists. That was our first mission, to educate the children. But I'm sure, I like to think he would be very happy at what happened to to his estate.
He made a great fist of it. Will you introduce, so that our producer here on your show doesn't give me a second whack, introduce your other sister here, is it Magdalena?
Sister Magdalena, yes. Sister,
what's your story, Sister Magdalena? You're very welcome.
Thank you very much, it's a pleasure.
Now, what is your role now and as you go forward with massive plans for Kylemore Abbey, where do you fit into all of this?
Well, in the past I was the developer of Kylemore for quite a long period of time, and so I'm very happy to assist Sister Maura in her endeavours at the moment.
It's not a bad resume. Tell you, what an amazing job. You know,
yes,
you and the sisters.
It's ambitious, and we've done a lot over the years. Much has been achieved, but much more has to be achieved, really.
Yes.
So that we can, you know, continue with our mission of outreach, particularly to the people of Ireland and the people of the world who come and visit us. At the moment, we're restoring the school gymnasium, and that's going to become our church, where we will pray and sing the Divine Office and have Mass where people can come and pray with us and reflect and find God in their way in our particular space in the west of Ireland.
Yeah, it is one of the things that I find to be part of the mystique of Kylemore Abbey is that when you come in and you see all the activity and you see so many visitors, so many tourists, and they're busy, they're torn between, looking through and trying to get, a real feel for Kylemore Abbey, and then there seems, to be the commercial aspect of it as well, which means, and definitely I think Yanks are way ahead when it comes to taking bits of Ireland back with them. But when you enter Kylemore Abbey, it is a very welcoming place, always has been.
It is a very warm, open space.
Yeah.
And it is a very fine experience. And people find great peace in the church that was restored some 15 years ago or so now.
Yeah.
And particularly in the garden.
Great job. Yeah.
And the lovely walkways. It is a very, very reflective place.
Mm.
And a place where people can find quiet and rest, and souls are moved in Kylemore.
Yeah. And that combined with the hustle and bustle, which is outside before you get there, because it's a lively, on top of every place, everything else. It is a lively place, and I think that it is very warming for visitors and for tourists. And then you have the solemnity of the abbey itself when you go through it. So it's great. And I say that because I have always felt, it's virtually impossible to visit Kylemore Abbey and not actually come out of there without capturing what appears to be, centuries of history and of culture, and yet We're talking about a place that has made enormous progress in now less than 100 years.
How right you are when you say it's a place of culture and history and all that. A place of great love and hard work.
Yeah.
And this is what we plan to continue to do.
Well, you are doing it. Just explain to us, if you will, since your job over that 15-year period, what restoration, were there many changes to the existing castle? What was this?
Yes.
How was the transformation there?
Some of the main rooms in the castle, on the ground floor particularly, have been opened to the public and restored.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Gothic church in the grounds was restored again in about 1990.
Yeah.
And then we've already mentioned the Victorian wall garden,
yeah,
which was a mammoth restoration, really.
Right.
Which took quite a few years.
And it's not just a token garden.
This is an extraordinary experience.
Yeah.
You know, the juxtaposition of even the setting, the more rugged landscape there, and this magnificent cultured garden
right
in the center of it. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It is. For those who are planning to go to Kylemore, unless you're on a tour coach, on a coach tour, where your time is actually assigned, and they do, any of the coach tours going in there, do provide what is necessary. But for those who want to visit there, don't plan anything else extraordinary for the day, because it's a great place to hang out and to be there. I've gotten caught there many times myself and thinking we'll make a brief stop here. That does not happen in Kylemore. It's great.
And what is wonderful is that people come back and they keep coming back, and that shows how important Kylemore is as a destination and the experience of Kylemore.
When are you open? When is Kylemore Abbey? When is it available to visitors and to tourists?
It's now open all year round.
Good. That's great.
And
it really is.
It's good to have it open all year round, because not every place is open in winter time, and we can provide the usual copper and more sustenance for people when they come in winter time as well.
That's true.
That's rather nice that we can do that.
A question I want to come back to Sister Maura Hickey. Many would wonder about the future, not only of Kylemore and the Benedictine nuns, but the obvious lack of vocations of a very rough period, not only in Ireland, but actually around the world, in terms of vocations and such. Where does that leave us, and how do you see this going forward?
Well, one thing I'd like to say, in the whole history of the Benedictine Order from the 6th century up to now, there have been huge, huge ups and downs.
Right.
Times when monasteries nearly died out. Hundreds of years when there were no Benedictines in Ireland. Our own community in Ypres, in the 250 years I was out there, there were a couple of times when it was down to two or three sisters. And there are the history of nearly of any old monastery on the continent, Germany or France or England, will tell you of times where they went down to next to nothing, and there were a couple of souls who persevered there, kept the prayer going, kept practicing hospitality in the little way they could. And one day a turn came in society or the church, and they were ready to pick it up, to grow up again. And I think our present time is, you know, in the continent of Europe after the Reformation and the time of Napoleon, where everything became secularized, In the whole, the German-speaking area, I know more about than the rest, but in the whole German-speaking area, that's Germany, Austria, Switzerland, there were, at the beginning of the 18th century, four women's communities left over from hundreds that had been there over the Middle Ages. And within about 90 years, they have grown to about 30.
Mm-hmm.
And at the present time, there are more than 40 Benedictine women's communities in Germany. And looking,
are they lay? I know the women's communities and whatever. What is are run by the Benedictines?
Oh yes, yeah. Like ourselves.
Right.
Different houses with different missions and different communities,
right.
But. Most of them would be getting smaller at the moment.
Yes.
Most of them would have been double the size of about 30 years ago. But we have this history where we know that's the way things go. It goes up and goes down. And let's not lose courage because we're only 15 in the community now. There have been much worse times. And there is a motto of the Benedictine order. A little picture. It goes back hundreds of years. You see a cut down tree and there's a new shoot growing out of it, right? And a Latin word under it saying, out of the cut down tree a new green shoot emerges. And we would always be applying that to our own situation. Now there's no guarantee that any monastery is going to last forever, but this is what we live on. And
definitely, if I may use colloquialism, you know, been there, done that. We obviously, and I'm sure many times throughout history, many would have good reason to believe that this was the end of an era, and yet, you know,
something
there is,
was there that kept it going,
right.
And I believe we are going through a very difficult time in society and in the church. And
financially, economically.
Every way. And many people are disappointed in their experience in the church, and women are looking for, they have much more opportunities than they would have had 50 years ago for careers and so on. But there are plenty of people out there who are longing for a life with depth and meaning that will satisfy their longings, and it's a longing for God in the last analysis. And people like that come visit us as well. And I have great confidence that when the next few years, as people see that Guy Moore is moving on and planning to reinvigorate its monastic life there for the future, make it more of a Benedictine monastery, I would have no doubt. We won't grow to a huge flourishing community, but a community that will live there as a Benedictine community wants to live and pass the message on.
Terrific. Extremely well said. I want to wish you the best of luck. Your foundation is first of all, it is up and running, but from the United States, actually, this is your maiden voyage to the United States, and I know that a great number of listeners and of people in the community still haven't made it to Kilmore Abbey, and God knows for this year, the year of the gathering in Ireland, where the Irish diaspora, and indeed many who have long planned to some degree to go to Ireland. Well, this is the year that you can indeed, if you are going to Ireland, particularly if you have not visited Kylemore Abbey at the gateway to Connemara. Though some might take issue with that, but I kind of think of it as the gateway to one of the most fantastic areas in the whole of Ireland. Kylemore Abbey is a must, and indeed you can get plenty of information on that from Tourism Ireland, ireland.com. There's a website also, which is www.kylemore, that's with the Y, kylemoreabbey.com, kylemoreabbey.com. Or for those who on this side of the Atlantic here would like to know what's going on, what's the foundation, where can you get information on that? Sister, will one of you tell us about you? Or why don't we put Mary on as well, right? And she'll be able to tell herself. Now, where's your habit? First of all, your name?
Mary Reed.
Yeah, and how did you get roped into this?
I am happy to say I am thrilled to be part of the development efforts here in New York City to involve the Irish here and the Irish Americans to become more involved in the development campaign at Kylemore. And if anyone would like more information on that, they can call me at 914-420-3517.
Friends, I again would like to welcome and to wish nothing but the best of luck to my guests in studio, Sister Maura Hickey, Abbess of Kylemore Abbey. By the way, Sister, if you grab that microphone again, tell us, where are you from? Where were you born?
I was born in Dublin, grew up there. I moved over.
You were banished to the West. Go ahead.
Well, I remember seeing Kylemore as a child when I was on holidays in the West, and I fell in love with it, but I thought I would never dreamed that I would be living there any day. Even when I knew I wanted to be a nun, I couldn't have thought of that. Anyway, I left Ireland, went to England, and did my education in England, and I entered a Benedictine monastery in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had got to know German people and German Benedictines, and it made sense for me. So I spent most of my life as a Benedictine in Germany. But I was in contact with Kylemore a lot over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Came often and was involved in what was happening there. And since 2008, I have been full-time there now.
So, Sister Magdalena, Lena, you're bred and buttered where?
Born and raised in Cork.
Cork.
From Oi.
Well, that wasn't too much of a culture shock to go from Oi up to the West.
It was immense. to leave the rich rolling pastures of the south of Ireland.
Yeah.
And
oh, God.
Live
Here's
in the
cork coming out in you. Go on.
Live in the wilds of Connemara.
It
was...
Did you meet a big crowd, actually, of those from the west of Ireland who felt that they were emigrating when they went east to the Big Smoke to Dublin and around that area. You must have met an awful gang of them on the road, that's all right. Yeah, but, you know, with all due respect, and I, you know, probably mean now to have any wise remark, but there is a theory that, you know, Corkonians are homesick even when they're at home, you know, so, but we'll...
I'm not so sure.
We'll, I know.
There's enough to draw people and keep them in Cork.
Listen, my maternal grandfather, came from Cork, up to Bohola in County Mayo,
please.
And for employment. To both of you, and obviously I take great pride, and it's a lifetime ago since I first visited Kylemore Abbey, and I have to say that it is a particular pleasure for me to have you, Sister Maura Hickey, and also Sister Magdalena here, and indeed that phone number, again if I have it right, is 914-420-3517, 914-420-3517. Or indeed a website that I suggest you visit is kylemoreabbey.com. Kylemore Abbey, one of the great, not only beauty spots, but one of the massive success stories for education. You still have retreats and huge plans which will lead up to the centenary celebrations. Kylemore Abbey, Connemara, friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network.